This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Looking forward to today's episode. Bill Conley, ESPN, the creator of SP Plus, which is something we certainly reference a lot. It is a great resource when it comes to college football handicapping, and especially during the offseason when he pumps out articles about returning production, luck regression, and just his updated power rating. So we're going to dive into a lot of different things when it comes to Bill Conley. And one question that we'll start things off with: this year's number one team in returning production, Notre Dame. Wow, that's early. Less than a minute in. Go ahead and drink. But where does their returning production this year compare to teams in previous years? And how much should we utilize that towards betting, win totals, futures, etc.? So we will dive into all of those things with Bill, including his fresh 2026 SB Plus numbers, who's number one, who's number two, etc., etc. So looking forward to that conversation with Bill Conley coming up here in just a little bit. We are 143 days away, boys and girls, from the start of the college football season. We're recording this on April 8th. It's Masters Week. College basketball is all wrapped up, but we are inching closer to the start of college football. Hopefully, no big injuries during spring, knock on wood. There is no transfer portal in the spring for football, so that does help us as handicappers to take a look at where these teams are, the reports coming out of spring ball, and no real big changes. Now, you could see a transfer here or there, certainly, but for the most part, the hay is in the barn, to reference Jerry Sandusky, who has just retired as the voice of the Baltimore Ravens. But we are, once again, 143 days away from an 8-game week zero, and we have referenced those quite a bit. We have point spreads up, which is great to see. Not on every game, but a handful of those week zero games, including NC State, Virginia, which right now Virginia laying 3.5. Tony Elliott getting an extension. North Carolina taking on TCU over in Dublin. The NC State Virginia game will be in Brazil. TCU a 7.5 point favorite. Actually heard from someone yesterday that likes what they see in TCU and might have taken a shot on them as a long shot to win the title. So appreciate all the kind words from the episode we just had with my buddy Joshua Nunn from the Action Network. We went over a couple of win totals that he likes, so check that out. And we're going to try to pump these out around once a week as we keep it rolling here in the off season. And once we get into the thick of it in May, once a week, we'll have an episode for you. But here we are in April. Let's keep it rolling. So please help us out. Rate, review, and subscribe. iTunes, Spotify. We're up on YouTube now. Every episode on YouTube. We're going to be putting clips out on Twitter as well. So do hit us up as much as possible. You have an email, cfbpod@vsin.com. So you can check that out and continue to hit us with those 5-star ratings. So we're going to take a quick break here in just a moment. But one more shout out. You know what I'm rocking. Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of this podcast. Our guy Mike Kawazoe doing great work out there on the islands. And shout out to Aran Ganat, the hoops coach. He's got a new extension. All right, quick break. When we come back, Bill Conley from ESPN.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Well, with college basketball all wrapped up and so much of our time spent talking about KenPom and Bart Toivik and Evan Maya and all of these analytical sites for college hoops, it felt like the perfect timing to bring on Bill Conley from ESPN. We reference SP Plus all the time here on this podcast. And Bill, is it an apt comparison to say that you are sort of the KenPom of college football with the SP Plus rating system?
I mean, that's the goal. I mean, I'll leave it to others to figure out who's, you know, more accurate or better or whatever. But no, I mean, the goal is a power rating, a predictive look forward, and so we end up you know, you can kind of see when a team's riding a string of luck and you know, they have a great record and they're only 48th in KenPom, I can feel that. I understand what his social media mentions are probably like, because we experience similar things in that regard.
Well, at the end of the day, his number one team was Michigan, so it worked out well. Actually, ended up being the second best team, I think, since he started putting together his rating system back in 97. Oddly enough, the best team didn't win the title. That was Duke in 99. You know, for you, just give us a little bit of the backstory. I think we talked about it last year, but so many people, you know, in the gambling space, maybe don't blindly use your numbers, but certainly reference your numbers a lot, Bill. What is the backstory of putting together SB Plus and how long, I can't say perfected, I know you're always kind of tinkering with it, but how long until you felt real comfortable with putting those out there?
So I started a Missouri blog in 2007 and realized just how long an off season would be and how much content you would need to create. And so I thought, you know, I follow baseball stats. I don't really like baseball. I'm a Pirates fan, so of course I don't like baseball. But I like the stats and they made a lot of sense to me. And I was wondering, you know, if college football, which I always liked more anyway, you know, what exists for college football analytics? And nothing existed really. It was Brian Fromoa just started at Football Outsiders, and I, you know, so I just started entering stuff into play-by-play into spreadsheets, I should say. And I'd say by 08, I had something like a rating of some sort. I didn't really know how to adjust for opponent very well. That is the biggest issue with college football in general, is we have a tiny sample and a very broad range of quality within the sport. And so figuring out exactly how to adjust for opponents really hard. I would say I probably started feeling like SP Plus was actually good sometime around 2013, if I had to bet. It did pretty well against the spread before that, but it was just huge error rates and just it wasn't stable. And you know, Marshall ended up number three for a little while, and which, you know, told me, I guess that was 2014 when that happened. So maybe 2015 was when I started feeling good about SP Plus overall. But regardless, you know, it's cruising along now. I had a good year last year, and that was good to see, because obviously projecting teams in the offseason is trickier than ever. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like I've set up a system that can adjust, can project teams pretty well. And when it doesn't, it can adjust pretty quickly to the actual standard in a given season.
You know, Bill, certainly something that we reference a lot during our offseason prep work for a number of years was returning production, Art. Who's bringing back all these players? And now the portal is unique. So before we get into your returning production rankings this year, how have you started to tweak the portal? Because you look at a team like Texas Tech, I know they finished, I believe, third in your SP Plus numbers last year at the end of the season. You knew they were bringing in a ton of talent, but other schools, it hasn't worked as well. Maybe they go a little bit lower level. So for you, trying to project where these teams are going to be from a returning production, how have you changed with portal additions?
Well, I've continued to try to fiddle with the idea, because, I mean, really, returning production now means incoming and returning. It's who you returned from last year, but then also what did you add? If you added a new starting, or if you added somebody's 3,000-yard quarterback, then, you know, 3,000 passing yard gets added to the, you know, numerator and denominator of the, you know, the formula, basically. So in that sense, it really hasn't changed. Like, what I do hasn't really changed all the much in 10 years. It's just 10 years ago, it would be like, you know, a big deal if you had six transfers, and now, you know, the national average is in the low 20s, and it's right. So it's a different atmosphere. I've tried lots of things like waiting, incoming, returning differently, and all these different, nothing has worked better than keeping it pretty simple and just continuing to do it the way I always have done it. You get half credit for if you bring in an FCS guy or lower, so, you know, 1,000 yards, you get 500 yards credit, stuff like that. But strangely, the process hasn't really had to change all that much. It measures something very different now, but it's still kind of the same measurement.
So Notre Dame is number one in returning production at 72% in your column. Maryland is number two at 71, Nebraska 69. Before we dive into those teams, Bill, how does that compare to recent years and teams that used to bring back, oh, this FCS or this G5 team is going to be great because they bring back 80% of their production. Where is 72% compared to recent years?
I mean, not high. It's a very, very different situation. Obviously, 21, when everybody returned everybody, that was different. That was a very unique thing. But the national average for returning production that year was 77%. So it was higher than the best returning production figure this year. And it's gone. It was 63% in 22. Then it was 60, then 53 last year. Part of that is because I count incoming transfers for, you know, in both numerator and denominator. Like if you lose a 3,000 yard passer and you add one, that's 50%. So just the more transfers that get baked into the system, the lower those numbers are going to be. But it is 51% this year, I think. Lowest it's been since I've been, I think 14 is the first year that I did this, and it's been nowhere close to 51%. So it's just a different environment. 80% used to be kind of the guaranteed. If you hit 80% return on production, you're almost certainly improving to some degree. Nobody's close to 80% this year, but Notre Dame also doesn't have to actually improve very much to be a really, really, really good football team. So the fact that they still have more than everybody else probably still means something in terms of, you know, just what their potential is for 2026.
So looking at those rankings, you mentioned Notre Dame, 72%. They bring back 67% of the offense. That's 19th nationally, 77% of the defense. And you bring back the quarterback, which is massive. And that's going to be a storyline all year throughout college football, is the returning quarterbacks this year. But they do lose Jeremiah Love. They do lose Jadarian Price. So offensively, Bill, where do you look at for Notre Dame as their production? Because I think a lot of people are expecting a big season from the Irish, but you do lose the best running back and arguably the second best running back, at least from a pro prospect standpoint, in the country.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, the weights of the different, you know, types of production, whether it's offensive line snaps or quarterback yards or whatever, the weights are based on kind of just what predicts, you know, improvement and regression in the past. Basically all says that replacing running backs is easier than replacing anything else on offense. And so they benefit from that, obviously. You lose 2,000 rushing yards. Your leading returning rusher had like 220 yards last year. That's obviously a tricky place to be, but also, you know, the quarterback is what's most important here. Offensive line, you know, that percentage of offensive line snaps, which they do just fine in, that's a big thing. The fact that I plugged in Jaden Greathouse's 24 stats instead of 25, because that was a weird case because he certainly played last year, but he never was anywhere close. So I figured that was a safe assumption to make to put in his 2024 numbers. And you know, that all works out to, you know, top 20 levels. And that tells you something. The fact that they returned three offensive linemen, most of their backups, that alone is something that most teams can't, you know, boast. And so that helped them a lot in those numbers. Plus, the fact that they had, you know, CJ Carr back as well. So that was more than enough to overcome those running back losses.
You know, looking at the rankings of teams returning production, it is pretty interesting because three teams, if I'm doing the math right, in your top 10 all have new coaches, which you would think wouldn't have a bunch of returning production, but they're obviously going to be busy in the portal. So Virginia Tech, number 4, UCLA, number 9, Florida, number 10, Bill, what are you expecting from those teams in year one of those respective new eras?
Yeah, and obviously with UCLA especially, kind of the other two, but especially UCLA, big influx of players coming from Bob Chesney's former team, James Madison, a team that was much better than UCLA last year. So that's an immediate upgrade there. But yeah, it does kind of tell you, number one, it tells you that the bar is lower. Like you can't really, like I was talking about with transfers, you can't take on 30, 40 transfers and still return 80-something percent of production, but you don't need to rank in the top 10 or 15 anymore. So it is a lower bar when it comes to those production levels. But I do think UCLA is a really interesting team. Just lots of upgrades made. And the fact that they kind of combined both kind of proven proven players at JMU level and kind of lower, smaller school, you know, just smaller school guys throughout the roster, but then also lots of recent redshirt freshmen or sophomore blue chippers as well, that if they develop in addition to the kind of the proven smaller school guys, that's a massive upgrade all around for UCLA. So I am curious. It's hard to, like, they ranked really low last year, so the bar is not high in terms, if they get to 6-6 or 7-5, that's a massive improvement, but I do see that as a possibility.
You know, circling back, and we'll dive into the transfer portal, and you had a really good column breaking down your favorite portal changes. But, you know, sometimes you hear the old adage, well, not all returning production's the same production, because if they were that good, then they would have left and gone somewhere else, or they'd be in the NFL, whatever it may be. So, you know, you have Notre Dame at one, and then you have Maryland at two, and Maryland's a team that really struggled last year. Mike Locksley was on the hot seat. He keeps his job. So, are you bullish on Maryland, or is it just, hey, they're bringing back a lot of the players from a year ago?
Yeah, this is where I always definitely try to reinforce that this is, you know, higher in returning production means improvement is likely, but Maryland's not going to suddenly be a top five team or anything like that. So I do think, you know, with Malik Washington returning, with a lot of work done, bringing in a couple of pretty high volume slot receivers, you know, one from Wyoming, one from Old Dominion, the Old Dominion guy's very explosive. That made a lot of sense. And you return, I think, three starters on the offensive line, added one. The defense is pretty experienced, and the defense wasn't just horrendous last year. It improved, even though the offense didn't really improve all that much. So, yeah, I mean, you can certainly paint the picture of like a top 50-ish team, which after last season would be improvement. It's just, yeah, we don't want to overreact and say that suddenly they're going to be a dark horse Big Ten contender or anything. No, they're just probably going to be a little better.
Yeah, so you look at their non-con, Hampton at UConn, and then Virginia Tech. That'll be a pretty intriguing game there. They have Ohio State, no Indiana, wrap up the season with Penn State at home. So interesting schedule right now, win total sitting for Maryland at 4.5. Bill, before we take a quick break and pivot to some of the transfer portal winners and losers in your column, any other team that when you looked at their returning production just kind of jumped off the page at you, whether it be good or bad, saying, wow, this team might be one to look at or maybe one to be a little worrisome about heading into this upcoming season?
Well, the simple fact that, you know, previously returning production, if you won the national title, you were probably going to rank 90th or worse in returning production. You'd lose a bunch of pros or guys to the pros, and then you'd have to rely on those backups to carry you the next year, which, you know, if you're Ohio State or Alabama, they probably were going to, you know, do just fine in that regard. But the simple fact that you look at the top of the returning production list and you see a lot of teams that were really, really good last year, not only Notre Dame, but Georgia is sitting there in the top 10, and Oregon and Texas Tech are right outside the top 10. The ability to reload with transfers, especially, and keep, you know, kind of the borderline guys, you know, because you can pay them more too. It is possible. There's a lot more really, really high level teams at the top of this list, whereas previously it'd be like the disappointing team that was 5-7. Now they return 84%. They're ready to make a big push. Now it's a lot of, I don't know if you would say rich getting richer exactly, but it's kind of like that. And so that was the first thing that jumped off the page to me. You don't usually see a Notre Dame at number one, Georgia, Oregon, Texas Tech, Texas A&M's in the top 15 as well. Like, that's unique. Meanwhile, if you scroll all the way to the bottom of the list, you're not going to see many power conference teams down there. It's the MAC, it's the Sun Belt teams, the lost head coaches and whatnot. It's a lot tougher to maintain a certain level when you're capable of getting so plucked apart at this point. It's not the best place to be.
Well, one of those coaching changes was Oklahoma State as they bring in North Texas's head coach, and they bring in a whole lot of talent as well. We'll dive into some of Bill's favorite transfer portal hauls on the other side. Let's take a quick break, though. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
As we continue with Bill Conley, Bill also has a column out ranking some of his favorite portal hauls. And Bill, number one is Oklahoma State. What a rough ending to the Mike Gundy era, as we all remember. And now they go to Eric Morris, who had tons of success in North Texas. Drew Mestemaker was a record-setting quarterback. He follows him to Stillwater. But it's not just Drew Mestemaker going to Oklahoma State. So coming in at number one on your most on your favorite transfer portal haul was Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I mean, it's Mestemaker. Caleb Hawkins was just about the best freshman in the country last year. He's, you know, he had 25 rushing touchdowns. He's coming along. Wyatt Young and Miles Coleman out of the receiving core. Maybe the two best offensive linemen are coming along, too. I mean, they're going to start at least six former North Texas players, most likely on offense this coming season. And North Texas was first in offensive SP Plus. So it really is the latest experiment. And just how much can you flip a roster and take it from terrible to awesome in a single year? I don't know. Defensive additions are solid, but not as impressive. So we'll see. It might be a case of them, you know, old school Oklahoma State scoring 40 points a game and allowing 35. But they should still be, I mean, that was their worst team per SP Plus since like 1961, something to that effect. The simple fact that they, you know, I have them projected in the top 40. And that's pretty crazy considering how horrible they were last season. So it does, you can flip things pretty quickly. And suddenly they have some of the most proven offensive talent in the country a year after having absolutely none.
Yeah, you look at their win total. It is 5.5 at FanDuel. Very juiced to the over, though. And, you know, as we do our early season prep, Oklahoma State was certainly a team that I was going to have a key eye on there, see how improved they were. So you go from a team that was dreadful and they bring in a ton of talent to the next team that went 16-0. So, you know, the rich get richer a little bit here. So Indiana, their portal haul, I like the line that you said, I just love the tidiness. They went after what they needed and they accomplished a lot.
Yeah, I mean, even before they had played in the semifinals, they just basically had a weekend free and they just went, we'll take you and you and you and you. And then they were done. They were ready to go. Josh Hoover, obviously, spectacularly high bar to clear, but he's probably more proven than Fernando Mendoza was this time last year, too. I mean, he's got, I think, what, almost 10,000 career passing yards. Obviously a different system, but as Kurt Cignetti pointed out, like, you know, he might have thrown a lot of picks in his previous life, but he has a run game and a defense, which, you know, a little bit of a jab there. But they went out and grabbed one of the two or three most proven quarterbacks. Love Turbo Richard, the running back from Boston College. He was really exciting as a freshman. Then last year got no help whatsoever, but still averaged 5 yards a carry, was as close to as reliable as possible. He's averaged like 3.7 yards per carry after contact, and now he'll get a couple more yards downfield before he gets contact, so that probably means good things. Just grabbed a couple proven receivers, another former Wisconsin offensive lineman. That's not the first time he's done that. Some of the most proven pass rushers. It was just whatever they needed. They just went out, evaluated, set up their priority list, grabbed them, and that was it. And here we go.
Sonny Dykes, to your point, referenced that Josh Hoover turned the ball over 42 times in his 31 starts. Kirk Cignetti, no surprise, clapped back and said, we've got to clean up some of the turnovers, obviously, which Coach Dykes made light of. But when Josh got here, he met his two new best friends, great defense and a really good run game. And he was never the same after that. So there you go. A little playful jabbing there. Colorado's a team that is always going to be busy in the portal, losing players, bringing in players. If you are a college football nerd like you and I are, and many of our listeners are, to get the production of a Danny Scudero from San Jose State and a Cam Perry from Miami, Ohio is certainly intriguing. I think people are a little worrisome, though, Bill, about who's going to be throwing them the ball. Will Juju Lewis make that next step at quarterback? But Colorado is a team that's really been busy in the portal since Coach Prime got there, and this year no different.
Yeah, it felt like there was more of a plan this year. Like I could actually see, instead of just grabbing whatever was available and having to grab 60 guys, they still grabbed 40 something, but it really, you could see that they were aiming far more for known production this time around. And they got it. I mean, Scudero and Perry, DeAndre Moore from Texas was one of Texas's better receivers. I like what Texas did, but I also kind of hate that they pushed out so many guys that they'd worked so hard to develop to get Cam Coleman and whatnot. whatnot. I don't know if that was the right trade, but DeAndre Moore should be ready to play a role. Obviously, you know, bringing in an offensive coordinator who has a pretty proven system. Brennan Marion changes jobs every single year, just bounces all over the country. But wherever he goes, he scores points. He brought in some of his Sac State guys. And the defense, obviously, absolute teardown in every possible way. I like plenty of the guys and their production levels, but we'll see if that's just too much change and whatnot. There's no culture there because nobody stays more than a year, and it's going to always be really hard to build any momentum like that. But in terms of the 40-something guys he brought in, I like these 40-something guys quite a bit, a lot more than I did last year. So, you know, maybe that means improvement at the very least.
You know, you lump the 4, 5, and 6 together because they were arguably the three most expensive, notable portal classes. So maybe just a couple quick hitters on Texas Tech, LSU, and Miami and what they were able to do in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, Brennan Sorsby, I like Brennan Sorsby. I can't decide what I think Brennan Sorsby's ceiling actually is, but Tech, you know, clearly a lot of teams were going after him. Tech went out and grabbed him. They clearly showed they learned in the playoff last year they did not have enough of a quarterback. They went out and grabbed the best guy available pretty much. So that you can't, there's efficiency there. That made a lot of sense. And then they just did what they did last year. They grabbed some extremely productive defenders. Defense has almost nowhere to go but down. Last year was really, really special with the talent they had. But if the offense improves more than the defense progresses, then they're still a pretty comfortable Big 12 favorite. As far as the others, I mean, Miami obviously didn't do a ton of work, but they grabbed, you know, Darian Mensah and Barkate from Duke. That was enormous. So they got what they needed. And obviously LSU needed an absolute ton, but they also, you know, whether they expected to grab, you know, Lane Kiffin sure acted like he thought Trinidad Chambliss and Kewon Lacy were coming to town, but even though they didn't, still got some good Ole Miss players, still got Jordan Seaton, bunch of good receivers. I think he got most of what he needed for them to at least be like a top 15 level team.
All right. The last one I wanted to hit on is Florida Atlantic. They come in at number 10. And Zach Kittley entering year number 2, there were a couple moments that I remember last year where I bet on Florida Atlantic as a big underdog. And then because of their pace and their style, a close game went to a blowout very quickly. And I'm looking specifically at a Memphis game in late September where I think it was like 28-26 or something like that. And they ended up losing by, you know, 30. So, you know, this is going to be a team that I'm always going to be intrigued by because of the success and the unique aspect of Zach Kittley's offense. But you're really intrigued by their portal haul.
Yeah, I mean, this is, first of all, they're going to score points. They play at a really, really high tempo at a time when a lot of teams don't do that. Suddenly having a really high tempo is unique again, and they do it pretty well. Their offensive numbers were certainly, at least in the passing game, were solid. And like you said, the pure number of plays and drives means they're going to have plenty of opportunities to score points. Last year's problem was very obvious. They couldn't stop anybody from scoring points. And so the moment the offense had a hiccup, it was over. And he needed, obviously, a lot more disruption. And the fact that, you know, if you're Florida Atlantic, you can't go out and grab super disruptive G5 guys. They're moving up. And even high FCS guys probably move straight up to the power conferences. So he went down and got a 28 tackle for loss guy from Livingstone College in D2, Kenyon Garner. Just crazy numbers. Absolutely ridiculous numbers. And the fact that he's 6'4", 230, he's not a defensive end who's 6'185" or something. He seems to have decent size. That was like sight unseen. I would have tried to grab that guy with those stats and, you know, solid size. He got him. He got some disruptive linebacker, at least a couple of disruptive defensive backs. I just like the plan. They clearly knew they had to take some risks on maybe some lower level FCS or D2 guys, but they got some potentially dynamite additions there. And you add that to, you know, bringing back their quarterback, bringing back their top receiver. You can certainly talk yourself into them improving quite a bit. And they already improved at least a little bit last year.
Yeah, so I'm going to write down FAU. They're going to be certainly a team I'll dive into a little bit more. Bill, before we hit a break and hit some of your SB Plus rankings, anyone else? You've got a top 20. You've got an honorable mention. Just worth noting that really excites you, maybe off the radar a little bit from a transfer portal haul.
Yeah, I think Iowa loses a lot from last season, a lot more than they normally lose. And so we're going to find out a lot about their kind of their succession plans and everything. But the fact that Kirk Ferentz reached down into FCS, like it was higher FCS. It was Furman. It was Holy Cross, some teams that have been pretty good recently, North Dakota. But he just skipped right over FBS for the most part with his transfers and went straight down to some of the best FCS guys. I think that might pay off. They got, again, just in terms of pure disruption, they have some really interesting guys, and they were all underclassmen. They were FCS, like sophomores, freshmen, juniors, guys who could still develop a little bit. So I liked that. I think that was a good move for Iowa. It's not going to disrupt their culture a whole bunch. They'll have chips on shoulders like they're supposed to at Iowa. And that was one that I liked a lot. Lots to replace, but I think I like what they did.
Check out Bill's article. It's great. It really is a nice primer to get you ready for the college football off season as we head into the summer months. All right, one more break with Bill. When we come back, what do you guys want to hear about? The 2026 SB Plus rankings. Where does he have teams based off of the odds board? We'll hit that on the other side here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we continue with Bill Conley, ESPN. Follow him on Twitter at ESPN_BillC. And before we dive into the SB Plus rankings, the initial for 2026, Bill, you've got a book right over your right shoulder, perfectly placed, Forward Progress. And for those who can maybe look it out, it is those lovely gold pants. I know my buddy Mike Golic Jr. was very happy about Notre Dame getting the cover there. But give us the ins and outs of Forward Progress, the book that you released.
I mean, it's I felt like it was a pretty good time for a how do we get here and where are we going book. Now, granted, it came out in September and 1400 things have already changed since then. So, you know, hopefully I can put out a second volume at some point, but the history parts still ring pretty true. And I think when I was trying to spin things forward, at least some of the things that have happened in the months since, it was pretty clear where things were going. So yeah, I just, you know, it was pretty overwhelming, all the different things that were changing at once. And I thought it was a pretty good time to step back and look at each one: history of realignment, history of arguing about a playoff, history of this and that. And I like it. I think it'll hold up.
Well, I mean, there was no argument about the playoff this year, right, Bill? Nothing controversial happened on Selection Sunday?
No, nothing at all that I can remember. I can't think of a single thing. This was the year that I basically just quit on the idea of a committee altogether. I always thought my preference was part committee, part computers, like the BCS days. Now I don't want a committee to have anything to do with this. I just wanted all computers, like college hockey or something.
Well, based off of your SB Plus numbers from last year as a Notre Dame fan, I agree. I would very much be in favor of all computers.
And for the record, going by computers only, I'm pretty sure Notre Dame and Miami would have been in. It would have been Alabama and Oklahoma who would have been in a lot of trouble. So, you know, just that was something I was really annoyed with the Notre Dame-Miami thing and the way that, you know, it's one team as long as there's a team in between them, but you take that team out and now Miami's ahead. I thought that was just the dumbest process imaginable. But obviously Miami certainly had upside and certainly showed it when they got the opportunity.
Well, that was the funny thing, and not to relitigate it because I'm sure people have moved on, but it was, you know, to your point, it was, why does it have to be Notre Dame, Miami? Why can't it be Alabama? Yeah, Alabama has a great win at Georgia, but they just got destroyed wherever. We move on and we press forward and we look at 2026 and your SB Plus rankings that have come out, and Ohio State comes in at number one. So let's take a deep dive on the Buckeyes. Very challenging schedule. They'd have to go down to Texas this year. They play Indiana. But looking at this Ohio State team, what eventually led them to be the number one team in SB Plus? And what's the difference? What's the gap between them and number two?
Yeah, the gap's bigger than I thought, honestly. I figured they'd be number one. They just have, I mean, you think about them, number one on paper, they were number one in SB Plus all the way to Big Ten championship game. So they were kind of the leaders most of the way. And made sense as to why they would sit there in third gear most of the time and still win every game by 30. But I mean, they just have, you think about the things that go into SP Plus, they have the best recent history overall, especially now that Georgia's a couple of years removed from being kind of a top two team. And they have the recruiting, they have solid returning production numbers. They just have what they need. And, you know, now they don't have a redshirt freshman quarterback. They have a guy who's now thrown a lot of passes, and they can, They struggled to kind of shift him out of safety mode at the end of last season, where they had the lowest tempo in the country and they were really trying to keep him out of trouble. You know, now it's time to take those training wheels off, and you have your NFL coordinator coming in, and it's time to see what Julian Sain can do. He's going to have Jeremiah Smith. He's going to have the transfers they brought in were okay, but he's also still going to have all the enormous pipeline of recent star recruits, Chris Henry Jr. and whatnot, to fill roles there. The offensive line is experienced. Bo Jackson was one of the better running backs in the country at the end of the season. If I have a question about Ohio State, it's going to be on the defensive line as much as anything. They added some pieces to the defense in the portal, but I didn't necessarily love them, and we'll see if they still have the beef there, but we know that they recruit well, and they always have former five stars in the pipeline. So if the D-line holds up, I don't really see any major weakness here, and then they're clearly going to be pretty solid again.
Yeah, right now the way too early line has them as an ever so slight dog at Texas in week two, but the schedule at Indiana, at USC, Oregon's on there, Michigan, of course, to wrap up the season. So it certainly will be a challenge, and that yep. leads us into the second team in the SB Plus numbers heading into 2026, and that's the Oregon Ducks. Dante Moore, as we all know, is coming back. So you alluded to, it's a decent size gap in your numbers, about 3.5 points from 1 to 2. But what jumped out about Oregon, and looks like your offensive rating on them is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what questions I have for Oregon. That's probably the best thing I can say about them. Like Dante Moore, I was really kind of concerned. I thought he needed another year of seasoning before he jumped to the NFL. Well, he's going to get it. And, you know, they have Jordan Davison back. The receiving core was just a giant rotation last year. Guys were always hurt, but now they have all those freshmen back and Evan Stewart as well. The offensive line lost, I guess, 3 starters, so we'll see about that. But they're just everywhere there's a hole, there were guys in the rotation already who return, and obviously recruiting's been really strong. So especially adding Coy Parrish to the secondary, I just don't see where I have a problem here. The secondary was young last year, it held up, and now it's gotten reinforced with portal ads. If you ask me which teams I think I trust the most heading into the year, I think Oregon's either first or second on that list, with Ohio State and Notre Dame soon after. So it seems like, plus, you know, this whole thing where a different Big Ten team wins the title every year, if we're going to keep that going, it pretty much has to be Oregon. So I guess it's their turn.
It's Oregon's time to shine. And once again, if you had gone back, I don't even know, 3 years and said, hey, Michigan and Indiana are going to be your basketball and football national champ, you'd be like, wow, Indiana basketball is back. Good for them. Little did we know. Well, speaking of the state of Indiana, Notre Dame coming in at 3. We talked about them returning production-wise, both top 10 in offense and defense. Special teams was a bit of a nightmare a year ago. We'll see how that improves with the Purdue transfer at kicker. But Notre Dame coming in at number 3. Where did they end last year for you? Because there were some people, you know, in Vegas that had Notre Dame as high as number 1 in their power ratings on Selection Sunday a year ago.
Yeah, they finished 5th, and I don't do anything. I've never figured out a way to weight recency in a way that makes objections better. So, yeah, if there was any sort of hotness to add to that formula, that would have benefited them, because they were exceeding projections massively, basically from game 3 on. It wasn't obviously their schedule wasn't all that strong from that point, but the fact is, like, no matter how high they rose in SP Plus, they would then exceed projections, which suggested that they could have been even higher. So they're dynamite, like we're were saying, return your quarterback, return a good, healthy portion of your offensive line. The defense had tons of sophomores everywhere you looked, and now those guys are juniors. Most of them are back. So this is, yeah, the other of those three teams that I don't see any reason to think they're not going to be really, really, really good this year. And, you know, they added some reinforcements on the defensive line, even though I wasn't completely sure they needed to. So they have seemingly great depth and experience everywhere you look.
You know, Bill, based off of SV Plus, and obviously it's evolving, and as the season goes on, things will tweak and you'll change. But, you know, right now, and this is DraftKings, look around, there's other spots that'll be a little bit different. They have four co-favorites. So it's Indiana, Texas, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Do you, based off of your numbers, are Indiana, Texas maybe a little overrated, or are they still right there in the thick of it?
Yeah, I mean, they're fifth and sixth. And, if we look at average projected wins, Texas's schedule is going to really, they're going to struggle to, they can't really slip up. Right now, I have them projected six, but their average projected win total is 8.6 because of who they play. They play number one, they play number nine in SP Plus, 10, 12, 15, 16, 19, 20. They play almost half the top 20 on their schedule. And so it's just going to be, they're going to have to be absolutely dynamite to make sure they get across that line at 10 wins or so. They'd probably be at the top of the 9-3 pile, but still, like, that's going to be a massive challenge for them, as it is for Ohio State. Indiana's schedule is obviously harder than it was this past season, but it's still, they're going to have very good chances of getting to 9.9 as their average win total. They're going to be a projected underdog against Ohio State, but projected favorite against Michigan right now, even with Michigan back in the top 15, projected favorite at Washington. So they're going to have a really good chance. And at this point, until they don't dramatically exceed projections in every possible way, I guess we have to give them benefit of the doubt a little bit.
Let's go to Texas Tech, because projected point spread, they're going to be a heavy favorite in every single game this year. They and Notre Dame's win total are both 11.5, granted both used to the under, but the expectation is for both those teams to run the table. Notre Dame, I would say high end, they play BYU on the road, Miami and SMU, so more challenging games, but the other nine, pretty manageable. Texas Tech avoids Utah and BYU this year. Maybe Oklahoma State with the influx of talent could be a bit of a challenge there, but what's your projection on Texas Tech this year?
It looks like they're a projected favorite of at least 14.0 points in every game. Pretty ridiculous. And that, because of the, those, because of just the you add the odds up, that's still only at like 10.7 average projected wins, but that's still ridiculously high. And it looks like Oklahoma State on the road is their most likely loss right now. It's 81% win probability. So it's pretty, not that it's their fault that they avoided BYU and Utah, and hey, they pummeled those teams last year, so maybe it wouldn't have made a difference. But yeah, this is a spectacular, and the fact that they get Houston at home and Arizona at home, it really couldn't lay out any better for them. They can probably, work Brennan Sorsby in pretty, they'll have probably till week three to figure out what they have there and what he's best at. The running game's going to be dynamite. The offensive line's been reinforced, and they added that five-star freshman. So it's looking great. Like I said, the defense almost has no choice but to regress a little bit, but I kind of think the offense is going to improve by just as much, and they're going to be a top five level team again.
You know, Bill, there was a lot of heat on Kalen DeBoer a year ago. They get into the playoff, they beat Oklahoma, and then get smoked in the Rose Bowl. So there's, Alabama's a different world now because of what Saban was able to do. So the expectations are always high on Alabama. Looking at their schedule, you've got South Carolina at home. I guess we can't overlook Florida State because they beat them a year ago. Georgia at Tennessee, A&M at LSU, Vanderbilt, and they wrap up with their rivalry game, as they always do, against Auburn. Where are you? Where's SP Plus on Alabama, and what's your expectation for the Crimson Tide?
I they're projected 11th, which was a little higher than I expected, especially since recruiting rankings don't play as much of a role now as they used to. It's basically defense is the reason for that. The fact that they really are still, they haven't ranked, they've ranked lower than 11th in defensive SP Plus once since like 2007. They're pretty much always a top 10 defense, and they return solid level of production on that side of the ball. So that's kind of carrying their recruiting ranking right now. I guess now that I look at their roster, you know, they're going to have to rely on a couple D linemen transfers, but you know, I they're pretty good D linemen, so that shouldn't be an issue. Offense is where I have all my questions. You know, the fact that Ty Simpson had to carry as much weight as he did last season, and now they're without, well, I mean, without your leading rusher, the run game was terrible, but they're without two of their three primary receivers. Their offensive line wasn't quite good enough. All five starters are gone. They had to, you know, it's going to be a brand new offensive line and a mostly untested quarterback in Austin Mack or a completely untested quarterback in Keelan Russell. If Keelan Russell isn't absolutely amazing, like they're projected 32nd on offense, I don't see how they're even the 32nd offense if he's not spectacular. So I think the scary part for Alabama is even, you know, projected 11th, which is higher than I thought, their average projected win total is 8. Because in a 4-game span in October, they play number 4, 16, 9, and 10. Projected underdog in 3 of those, at least slight underdog, and they're just a tiny favorite against A&M at home. So that's rough. They do have an easy enough early schedule, especially if Kentucky's not quite ready, which I like their transfer class a decent amount. So they could be tricky, but even if they handle Kentucky and Florida State easily, you know, that'll give Russell or whoever a little bit of chance to build some momentum. But that is just such a brutal middle of the schedule for a team that looks less proven on offense this year than they even were last year.
You know, as we wrap things up, I wanted to do a couple quick hitters. At the bottom of that column that you have up on ESPN, you have the biggest adjustment and the biggest, you know, downgrade, if you will. So a couple of the teams we've already talked about, Oklahoma State is number one, adjusted points per game, 21.7. We talked briefly about UCLA and their portal haul. Who are some other teams that you improved to have a pretty big step in the right direction this year?
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma State's obviously going to be the biggest one there. But overall, let me pull that up to make sure where'd we go? There we go. Those are certainly interesting teams to prepare for. I'm trying to, man, I just lost my place all over again.
You got Oklahoma State, Virginia Tech, UCLA, Syracuse, I thought was an
Syracuse
interesting one.
Syracuse was the one I was thinking of there. That's surprising. I mean, part of that is just because their quarterback's back. And they, you know, were such a black hole offensively when they got, Angeli got hurt. But, you know, that was a surprise. Some of those teams at the top, you know, Oklahoma State, Virginia Tech, UCLA all lost their head coaches, added a ton in the portal. So you would expect that. Florida to a degree, but the two more surprising ones to me were Syracuse and North Carolina being up there a decent amount too. Part of that is just they were so dreadful offensively, both of them last season, that they are kind of just projected to float up a little bit. But, you know, especially, you know, I think North Carolina's transfer class made a lot more sense this time around. It's another school where they have so many holes to fill that we'll see what that means, and an improvement could just mean 6-6. But those are two teams that I didn't necessarily expect to see that high on the improvement list that are up there.
And then the biggest regression was North Texas, which obviously makes a ton of sense. The prolific nature of their offense, basically everyone is gone. So they're number one. Run through a couple of other teams that project to regress quite a bit from at least a points per game standpoint.
Yeah, Toledo was second on that list, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they hired Mercer's coach. He brought a lot of Mercer guys. But like I was saying, at the top, you know, you only get half credit for FCS guys. So, you know, losing a bunch of their guys to UConn and then adding basically half credit guys after that, we'll see how that works out. But I like a lot of, I mean, I think the production level of the guys coming up with him from Mercer and a lot of the other smaller school guys he got, I think that's I liked that class a decent amount. I think they were honorable mention on my favorite transfer classes list. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe that'll allow them to avoid regression there. But most of the teams at the bottom of the list were pretty good mid-majors who lost their head coaches. North Texas, Toledo, UConn took a lot of Toledo's players, but lost a lot of them anyway to Colorado State of all teams. Southern Miss, USF, just a bunch of teams starting over a little bit, and maybe they were flying a little too high, so gravity's going to take over a bit.
Lastly, Bill, something that we talk about in college basketball with the KenPom luck rating, and you've started to incorporate it a little bit too. And, you know, I remember last year talking about Arkansas. I'm like, man, this team is the best 2-10 team in the history of college football. It's like they don't get blown outside of the Notre Dame game. They were always in games. So you have, you know, luck factor, turnovers, roster, retention, all of that. Give us a couple teams based off of maybe just some unfortunate circumstances a year ago that you expect to maybe be a turnaround candidate this upcoming year.
Yeah, I looked at turnover luck and close games, which that was Arkansas. It was just, I think, 1-9 the last 2 years and one score finishes. Like, that should never happen. You shouldn't be that consistently close and figure out a way to drop the ball that many times. But, that alone makes Arkansas pretty interesting. If they just come in and start getting average luck and average execution at the end of games, then they're at least like 6-6. They, you know, maybe they're not amazing under Ryan Silverfield, but they're an obvious candidate. But you look at three different factors: turnovers, luck, close games, and then what I was calling lineup, stability, lineup consistency. Teams that ranked in the bottom or near the bottom in basically all three of those categories included Boston College. So a little stability and a couple bounces will go a long way there. Colorado's another one, especially since, like I said, I really like their transfer class overall. Oregon State and Liberty were pretty far down last season and might be able to bounce back. And in terms of power conference teams, another one that's kind of interesting is Missouri. They fell only to 8-5. They seemed to have a higher ceiling than that before their quarterback got hurt, but they also had pretty poor turnovers luck. They lost some close games for the first time in 3 years. Their lineup stability wasn't all that hot. And so if those things reverse a little bit, then maybe they get back towards the double digit range.
You could follow him on Twitter at @ESPN_BillC. The book, Forward Progress. Bill, I think it's fair to say, get it wherever you get your books, Amazon, etc.
As far as I know, I've seen it in bookstores and, hopefully it's still there, but Amazon for sure.
And of course, great offseason content. He's already got the SB Plus ratings out, turnover luck column that we discussed. So make sure you check out all of his content. Bill, really appreciate the insight. And obviously for us gamblers, you are a very important resource as we prepare for upcoming seasons.
Absolutely. Take care.
There he is, Bill Conley. That's going to do it for this episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks to Ryan Hunter and Wyatt Tomchek, our producer. I'm Tim Murray. We'll talk to you next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.